Fan of the show? Never miss an episode by subscribing to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or at our website, cinemapsychoshow.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, at Psycho Show.
Oh, goody, goody, here it comes.
Welcome to the Cinema Psycho Show.
You are interested in the unknown, the mysterious, the unexplainable. That is why you are here.
Oh, my God, don't stop now!
With your hosts, Ryan, John, and Elaine.
Welcome to the Cinema Psycho Show, the madhouse for film freaks and film fans of all types. I'm your host, Brian Carrington, not joined by my fellow co-host, John Lane Woolscroft. It's just me for this little intro here. We are on episode 192, and this week, John has a very, very special interview for us with two members of the crew of the film Cyst, which we've talked a little bit about here. John worked on this film, and it's always great getting these crew and cast perspectives on the film that looks like it's going to be coming out fairly soon. We'll be sure to keep you all posted when it does get released. But anyway, we have a special treat because the crew members we have today are actually the co-producer, editor, and VFX supervisor, as well as the cinematographer of the film, Sis. So these are pretty high-level people we have today. Who have, honestly, a very, very exhaustive history in the filmmaking industry. So what we're getting here is pretty much pure gold in terms of knowledge from two individuals. So we're going to be interviewing Jeremy Morrison and Nick Gardner of the film Cyst. So it's really a great interview. They showcase a lot of their experiences working in the film industry, as well as how they actually got involved with the film Cyst. So it's a lot of interesting stuff, especially for us, because we know a lot of the people involved in that particular film, and just kind of how things come together in a film like this is a pretty interesting story. It's not always just, you look at a job board and, oh, there's a posting for, a film. It's a lot of kind of like, hey, I'm working on this. Do you think it's a cool idea? Would you want to be involved in? And that sort of thing is kind of what happened with this. So I would also keep an eye out for a really, really crazy story that Nick goes into about how he nearly died on the set of Live Free or Die Hard while working as a camera operator. So it's a really great story. Just kind of showcases that sometimes to get the shot, it can be kind of dangerous. Even in the quote-unquote digital age that we live in. So without further ado, I want to shoot it over to John. And this is Jeremy Morrison and Nick Gardner of the movie Cyst.
Do you like the solar system?
Yeah, it's quite cool, planets and stuff.
All right, I am here with Jeremy and Nick, who are two very acclaimed filmmakers in their own right. But as I start off every one of these things, every time, I always say you guys could do a much better job of describing yourselves than I could. So could you just tell us a little bit about yourselves?
Sure. Well, first, thanks for having us on your podcast. This is great. I am mainly a producer and an editor, and I run a production company here in Baltimore. And I've been doing this for about 10 years now. So, and I work on all kinds of stuff, feature films, broadcast television stuff, commercials, industrials, all that kind of jazz.
And let's see, I've been doing this for, I think, almost 30 years now. I'm primarily a cinematographer, but I've directed a bunch over the years. Directed a bunch of the Rome series that Jeremy and I did when we lived in Lithuania. Mm-hmm. And I've worked on everything from huge feature films to tiny, no-budget things. And I used to work a lot for National Geographic doing documentaries back in the day, in commercials and everything else.
And as a point of reference here, I met these guys while working on the film Cyst, which, who knows what's going on right now with the world as it is, but hopefully should be out, later this year. And
yeah, I can give you an update on that. I mean, in fact, yeah. So the audio mix is almost finalized, and that's sounding great. And I just got, I edited that movie and supervised the visual effects and did a number of the visual effects for that with another company called White Rhino, who were great on that. But I just received the final color corrected picture file, and I'm downloading that overnight tonight because it's a huge file, and I can't wait to see it because it should be pretty exciting.
Gotcha. That's awesome. I'm glad to hear that things are really chugging along there. But yeah, I did, you know, obviously I say worked with Nick. I mostly got in his way because we did a lot of shooting in tight hallways, and I did a lot of behind the scenes shooting as well. And then just basically was in his way when he needed to get equipment. So thanks for tolerating me on the set, Nick. But it was,
didn't even know you were there.
That's a compliment. That's a compliment from Nick.
Oh, that's a good thing. But yeah. Now what made you guys get into your particular type of film focus? Cause you know, there's writing, directing, you know, hell, you could be an actor in front of the camera, cinematographer, editor. What made you guys go into your particular like focus with filmmaking? Cause I always think that's fascinating.
I mean, I think for me, it was always like, I've always wanted to make movies, and it's just sort of a process that sort of developed on its own. I started out as a graphic designer and then an editor, and then got more into producing here lately, and then running a production company. So it was, for me, it was just a process that sort of naturally happened. And there's always, in this business, there's always more to do, more to learn and get better at. So there's places to grow there too.
I was always sort of interested in cameras and, sort of gravitated when I first started working as a PA, sort of gravitated towards the camera department. It sort of just seemed like the most fun. And also people sort of treated the camera department like it was one of the most important, which was attractive. But
well, yeah, you got to get it on film or on.
Yeah, it doesn't count if there's no pictures. So.
Exactly.
But I actually worked as an assistant editor and as an editor for a while. I sort of got sick and tired of listening. I was doing camera assistant work freelance while I was being a freelance assistant editor, and I got sick of listening to editors complain about why they didn't shoot this or why didn't they get that, and having no idea what the conditions were like out on the field. This is usually on documentaries, so you know, bitching from an air conditioning room, why didn't they get another angle on the thing that was happening once in the middle of the desert, and you know, hour 14. But yeah, so I just sort of worked as a camera assistant and started shooting stuff, and here I am.
And can you guys talk about, you know, a little more detail what goes in to those particular skill sets? Because, you know, for the listeners who are just film fans and not, you know, have never done anything in the film industry, big or small, you know, it's more than just hitting the record button on the camera. Can you guys both talk about, you know, kind of the finer details that go into, you know, doing your particular type of art?
Well, producing is its own sort of crazy endeavor that involves all kinds of things. I mean, what is a producer? I mean, it really depends on who the producer is. But for post-production, I've kind of specialized in doing all of it. So I have a lot of experience editing, obviously, but, you know, color correcting and even doing sound design work. I mean, pretty much the entire, and visual effects and graphic design, you know, motion graphics. So there's all kinds of aspects to what it takes, I think, to manage post-production. That's sort of what I specialize in, is being able to handle the whole process from beginning to end.
I think the cinematography is, or being a director of photography is a lot more complicated than a lot of people think, and it has a lot less to do with making pictures than a lot of people think. I'd say at least 50% of the job is getting the making your day, shooting what you're supposed to shoot that day, managing. The director of photography is in charge of three departments, grip, electric, and camera. So you have to manage those three departments, you know, deal with manpower and equipment and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, it's a evolutionary process, and I'd say it probably takes 10 years before you realize how little you know and the things that you need to actually pay attention to. I think being a director made me a much better cinematographer because it let me inside of the mind of the guy I'm supposed to be trying to help. So once you've done the job that you're helping out for, you know how to take weight off of them and help them do their job better, which is takes a long time to figure out, and you really have to do the, you have to be a director to have figured that out. So,
and Nick, do you have a particular type of style, or is it more that you get on set and you figure out, okay, what's the director's vision and how can I best accomplish that, or is it a combination of both?
I'd say it's a combination of both. There's certainly styles that I, things that I gravitate towards. I'm a big fan of the moving camera. I'm a Steadicam operator, and I like long, complicated shots that do a lot of things at once.
That are a challenge, right?
Yeah,
I mean, it's fun to.
It's no fun to park a camera on a tripod and point it at something. That's not really, you know, the point. But I mean, I certainly, if left to my own devices, I'll certainly shoot stuff in my own style, which is often not what the director wants. that's always tempered by what they want. And also telling the story, you know, it's really about, does this shot get the point that we're trying to get across in the scene, you know?
And can you guys talk about how the game has changed over the years? Nick, I can't believe it's been, you know, 30 years. I don't know if you started filming when you were like 10 years old, but
15.
You know, obviously, you know, went from, you know, any level of film to digital, and now they're, you know, digital, you can look as good as anything, you know, that is shot on 35mm. Hell, most major Hollywood films are shot on some degree of digital. Can you guys just talk about how things have changed so much for the independent filmmaker, you know, over the past couple decades?
I think I was fortunate enough to be around when that was sort of happening. And I hooked up, you know, I worked with Nick and his family's production company for a long time. They were sort of my gateway into broadcast television and indie filmmaking. And, we might talk about that later, but there was a time there where I was doing just strictly post-production, and I really wanted to be on set, right? And because there was this change over to digital, there now became a position, DIT or data wrangler. You needed somebody on set to work with camera department to manage that digital media. So that offered me the opportunity to start getting experience on set. And that was really awesome for me, because that's exactly what I wanted to do at the time.
I think in the grand scheme of things, not a ton has changed with the transition from film to digital. There was a painful middle period. I mean, if you go back and look at production stills from, you know, movies in the 60s and 70s, people are, you know, Stanley Kubrick's running around with an Arri 2C, which is a really small light camera, or something like the French Connection, again, to, you know, Arri 2Cs. The cameras were light and small and mobile for the most part. And then when HD came out, they got really big and awkward and stupid for probably about 10 years.
Yeah.
And finally now it's swinging back around to where they're getting small again, which is great. I think the biggest change from the olden days to now is the lack of discipline which was required.
There's something more permanent about shooting on film.
Well,
right?
It's just really, really expensive.
Yeah.
You know, it's ballpark $800 for a 400-foot roll of film, including processing, and that's, you know, 4 minutes in 35mm film. So you do rehearsals, and you only roll when you know what you're going to shoot, and then you don't do 9 million takes. But now it's effectively free. And so, well, let's roll on the rehearsal. Well, let's try it this way. Let's never cut. Let's just keep rolling forever, which
sucks in the edit room.
It sucks in the edit room. Everybody loses focus, and it's always refreshing to work with a director, an older director who's grown up, you know, shooting film and knowing what they want and knowing what to shoot and what not to shoot and being laser focused and just getting what you need and moving on.
Now, Jeremy, you work a lot in post-production, but, you know, you obviously do some stuff in, you know, pre and production, and you know, Nick, obviously a lot of production work. Do you guys have any particular preference over, you know, pre-production, production, or post-production, or is it just name the game and we'll do it?
I mean, pre-production is essential if you're running a show to make it run smooth. The more work you put up front, the less anxiety you're going to have on the day, but you're always going to have challenges and problems. And honestly, production to me is what is the most exciting part. You build up, you prepare, it's a battle. You've got your team, you're together and you do the best you can. You solve the problems that hit you and you just keep getting up and get it done.
Yeah. I mean, exactly what Jeremy just said. I do enjoy the planning phase of things, and, you know, it's where you start to solve problems is, you know, here's the ask. How are you going to do this? And, you know, Jeremy and I once designed a set for a 15th century town on the back of a bar napkin at a bar.
Yeah.
Out of, you know, what if we get brought in sea containers and built them, did this, and then we could shoot this way and this way? You know, and that was a fun challenge to solve in pre-production. But the, you know, by far being on set, solving the problems on the day, you know, being tasked with some insurmountable thing and having to figure out how to make it work is by far the most fun.
It makes you feel alive. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yeah, because that pressure is flowing there, but so is the adrenaline, right?
Yes, totally, man, totally. Especially when you're, like, producing and you're, like, responsible for this budget. It's like, oh, man, you gotta get it right?
And so what is the differences between working on kind of, like, smaller independent films as compared to, like, working on, like, Hollywood blockbusters, you know, with endless budgets and, you know, A-list celebrities, whatnot. What's the difference between working on the indie films as compared to the big budget?
Nick, you've worked on way more bigger stuff. Yeah,
I would say the number one thing is time, because bigger budget buys you more shooting days and more time. Obviously, more personnel as well, but that just, you know, there's sort of this manpower time. What do you have to get done equation, and it doesn't really matter whether you subtract guys and add time or subtract time and add guys. It's, you know, it ends up in the same place. But with more money, you can have more guys and more time. And, you know, therefore, you have a lot. You're doing a lot less page count-wise per day, so you can devote a lot more energy to making something what you want and not just getting it done.
Yeah, a lot of times with lower budget stuff, it's all about it. Well, everything's making your day, right? No matter what scale you're at, but you've, you know, the bigger budget you've got, the more flexibility I think you have to really be creative with stuff. Yeah.
Gotcha. And speaking of larger films, correct me if I misheard this story, but Nick, Die Hard 4 almost killed you. Is that correct?
Yeah, that was the very valuable lesson I learned, where it's just, you can be stupid no matter how much money you have.
I want to hear this story again, because this is a great story.
It was a scene in the movie where Bruce Willis's character is in a police car, and they're stuck in a traffic jam downtown, hundreds of cars. Helicopter comes up over the building, strafes all the cars. Police car backs out, blows through a barricade, tears off down the street, and helicopter follows them down the street, shooting at them the whole way.
And this is in D.C. where you're shooting this, right?
We're shooting in Baltimore for D.C.
Okay.
Right down by the courthouse. So we had like four blocks of the city blocked off, and probably at least 100 cars all in there, and they all had squib hits in them that, you know, the special effects team had come and put hundreds and hundreds of squib hits all in all these cars. And so we did the wide shot first thing, and then, you know, I think we had five cameras or something, and so we did the wide shot, and then there was a flash thunderstorm, and so now everything was soaking wet and all the streets were wet, and so nothing would match.
Right.
So we stood around waiting for the rain to dry, and in the afternoon, probably right around 5 o'clock, somebody came out and said, you know, locations department said, we're losing the location in 20 minutes, we have to go now. And so the director of photography turned to me and said, okay, Nick, you're on the car stunt, 40 millimeter lens, go do that. And I turned to my assistant and said, okay, we'll need a hi-hat and this. And the DP said, there's no time for that. It'll be handheld. I said, okay. And so I walked down the street to where the car, we'd done one rehearsal where the car had, so basically the car is backing up, blasts through a police barricade and does a J-turn. So it does a 180 degree turn with the back wheels locked up, and then comes towards the camera. They did one rehearsal where the stunt driver screwed up and hit the curb and blew out all the tires on the car. So they had to reset for that. And then we did one take. So I based my camera position on the two skid marks on the road from the take and the rehearsal. So I sit down in the road with a 35 millimeter camera on my lap. And they call action. And, you know, there, a whole bunch of other stuff happened before the car was supposed to come at the camera. So I'm sitting there and the squibs are all going off. Bang, 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 bang. There's all this machine gun
fire. Is it like loud as shit?
Oh, it's super fucking loud. Yeah. You know, and then helicopter comes up and, you know, then that's loud and there's dead pigeons flying everywhere from the helicopter. And, you know, I'm looking through the lens and the, you know, car's backing up and it's getting bigger and bigger and bigger in the frame. And I, at that point, I think, oh, fuck, I am so screwed. Because I'm sitting cross-legged on the street with a, you know, 50-pound camera in my lap. I'm not getting out of the way in a hurry. And so the grill of the car just sweeps the lens really close and then burns out of frame. And I look up from the camera, and my camera assistant's across the street. He ran away.
He just ditched you.
He just ditched me. And, you know, he said, I thought we were going to die, man.
So he leaves you?
So like, he totally left me. And, you know, I'm like, if Jason had been there, he would have kicked the camera out of my... kicked the camera out of my lap and dragged me by my collar out of the way.
Jason's an AC that we work with quite often. Yeah, good guy.
But yeah, so just because you have all the money in the world and you can still be in a hurry and still be stupid and stunts never go as planned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you're still here. And I know this is probably the least thing I should take away from this, but 35 millimeter cameras are not light. So
not that one.
Now was that shot?
You're trapped sitting down with this giant hindrance on your lap. You can't even get it off quickly. It's not like a handy cam or something.
Was that shot actually used in the?
Oh yeah, it's in the film.
I gotta go back and watch that again.
Could you imagine if they ended up cutting that?
Yeah, that would suck.
So what are some of the more enjoyable films that you guys have got to work on and If you're able to share, are there any horror stories out there?
I mean, I think one of the most enjoyable memories I think I'm always going to have is one of the bigger projects I worked on sort of closer to the beginning of my career, which was a 13 episode series we did for the History Channel called The Rise and Fall of the Roman Empire. And we shot that and did all the post-production in Lithuania. And so lived over in Eastern Europe in Lithuania for a year. And that's really where I got to know Nick. I think you and your family even more, because we're all, you know, we're like six Americans or something over there with an entirely foreign crew. For me, that's a memory always.
I mean, that's definitely got to be, you know, up there. It was, you know, for those kind of things, we had shooting in Eastern Europe. We had a big crew. We had a lot of time. Mm-hmm. We had a lot of extras. We had a lot of big sets. Plus, we were living in this fantastic medieval Eastern European city where things were cheap and
the US dollar goes a long way
and you know it was definitely, you know, it was a long shoot. I think we shot for 105 days or something like that.
You were there 6 months and then we were there for a year.
The relationships that you make on a crew like that, you know, there's no other experience like working on a movie with people. So And I have friends that I've done like one movie with 10 years ago, and the phone will ring, say, hey, Nick, I'm coming through Baltimore. You want to go hang out? And it's like it's like we were transported back in time to that shoot, you know, and I just worked with this guy for a month 10 years ago. But, you know, we're brothers in cinema. So,
yeah, there's a camaraderie, I think, when you go through a project like that, because you really, I mean, in this industry, it's basically like you put your life on hold to work on something. And it just takes all your time.
Well, you show up every day at the time somebody tells you to show up. Yeah. You're told when to eat and what to eat. And you're with these people for 12, 13 hours a day nonstop.
Yeah.
And you see everybody at their best and everybody at their worst, because everybody is exhausted. But, you know, by the end of week one, everybody's completely exhausted and emotionally strung out.
Right.
And, you know, on Cyst, I think you almost brought me to tears when you brought me a Chick-fil-A sandwich.
It's like something so small.
I know.
Yeah. Yeah. Cyst. Those were some long days on that. Yeah.
The act of making a film, it seems romantic, and it is to a degree, but it's also insane. I sometimes don't know why we do it. I do, but yeah, Nick, it's exactly like you said. It's hours that, you know, shift nurses have, and it's day in and day out, because, you know, I mean, when we were working on System, we had some, you know, weekends. That was That was a godsend.
That was like a luxury. Yeah. Like, what is this day off? What?
But yeah, so how did you guys end up getting involved? Speaking of which, with CIST?
Okay. So this really all goes back to, what was the first movie we worked on with Tyler?
This actually all goes back to Lithuania.
This actually goes back to Lithuania because,
and actually before that, because I hired Rex
for something you worked on in the Caicos Islands.
Yeah,
Turks and Caicos.
So years ago, I think 2006. I think because I was working on The Wire when I got the phone call to go do this movie. So I'm working on The Wire. We're shooting nights. It's freezing cold, and my phone rings and I get. There would say, hey, Nick, can you come down to the Turks and Caicos Islands and do Steadicam for the next 3 months on these Lifetime movies?
By the way, you might hear a train in the background. There's a train that goes by the studio, so ignore that.
So I said, yeah, that sounds great. And I went to my boss on The Wire and said, hey, I got this opportunity to go, you know, down to the islands and do a movie. And they're like, yeah, get out of here. That sounds way better than this. And so I did that. And the first movie I did down there, there's this crazy director named Rex Piano.
That's his actual name, Rex Piano. This guy's great. I love. He's a great guy.
And Rex used to do episodic television. He was directed like Mike Hammer and
Like back in the '80s. He was like, he was in there, man. Back in the '80s, it was pretty cool.
But Rex was amazing at getting shit done on time because these movies had ridiculous schedules. I think they were 16 days maybe to do a full feature film, and we were shooting on 35 millimeter film. And so anyway, I worked with Rex, and I thought Rex was great. And then a couple years later, we were doing this Rome series, and my dad said to me, it's like, so I'm going to direct a third of these, and I want you to direct a third of these, and we need a third director to direct the rest of them. And I said, well, you know who'd be great at this is this guy I worked with, Rex Piano.
Right.
So we ended up hiring Rex and taking him to Lithuania, and we all worked together there. And then a couple of years later, Rex called me up and said, I'm doing a movie. There was an asteroid disaster movie.
Oh, Impact Earth.
Yeah, Impact Earth.
Right. This is a Stars movie.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I'll let you take it from there because that's where you can.
Well, so I met Rex in Lithuania, and then we get called to go down and do this Stars movie. I remember getting a call from the line producer, and he's like trying to lowball me on my rate, and he's basically trying to get me to convince you guys and everybody to come down there. We came to an agreement, and I think we just got a tow behind trailer and packed it full of all of our gear. And went down to Mississippi, and
you took Jason's motor. You took both your motorcycles.
Yeah, we took Jason and I ride motorcycles, and we took those with us too. So that was fun. But we packed everything up, went down there, and made this movie down there with Rex. And on that movie, Tyler was working with the camera department.
Was he
second AC
he was
on that?
Jason's second AC.
Yeah. So that's where we first met Tyler, and I think. After that movie was done, maybe a year or two later, he got the opportunity to direct Here Comes Rusty. Is that right? Yeah.
Yep.
And, of course, we were all friends by then, and so we were excited to be a part of that. So it was this kind of the same deal. It was me, Nick, and our buddy Jason, who's an AC, and we all went and did Here Comes Rusty. And after that, I know Tyler went off, and he did another movie in the meantime that we weren't a part of. It was a smaller movie that he did there in Texas Cotton. But most recently he called me up and said, I got this horror movie I want to do. And I think the original plan was to shoot this like in Oklahoma and then maybe somewhere else. They had a bunch of different locations they were trying to do, and they all kind of fell through. And eventually it was like, well, why don't you come to Baltimore? I can hook you up with the film office here. You can get a tax credit. I've got an LLC that I can put into your name so that you can qualify for that tax credit. And we've got the whole crew and everybody here to make it work. And in fact, where our studio is, it's kind of this funky industrial area. I mean, you remember it, John, it's kind of crazy over here, but there's an area that we were able to use to build the sets in. So that ended up working out pretty well.
Gotcha. Yeah. And I first came on, you know, a couple of days after production had started, and I was actually floored because I thought that was, when I walked in there, that was the natural inside of that building. And then I started to piece together. Like, as soon as I went out to use, like, you know, the porta potties outside of it, I'm like, oh wow, this entire thing is just a set built in this giant warehouse. I just thought that was the inside of the place. That was trippy.
Yeah, that actually, it's, yeah, we have a buddy of ours that's he's like a how would you define Andy?
It's one of the smartest guys I know. Yeah. He's sort of good at everything. And one of the things he used to do was design and build restaurants. And he sort of moved on to just doing designing and or he used to design, build, and run restaurants. Now he just does the design and building part. And he also builds furniture and that kind of stuff. So we got Andy on board to.
Yeah, he was like something like that. He's always had an interest in wanting to do something in movies. So it was a perfect opportunity to bring him on and be like, look, this is like this low budget thing. Do you think you're capable of converting this crazy old industrial warehouse type space into this 50s doctor's office for cysts? So, yeah, and I think he did a great job.
And what's it like? Is it the when people see the movie, they'll see it's a lot of small rooms, tight corridors, thin hallways. Like, Nick, what's it like shooting in those situations? Is it you just adapt and just deal with it, or is it a little frustrating, you know, not having as much room to move around and get equipment and get past crew and things of that nature?
It seems like no matter where you shoot, you're always in a tiny little spot. You're always crammed into the corner. There's never enough room for gear. There's never enough room for people. I swear to God, you could be shooting an aircraft carrier and you'd end up jammed up into a corner somewhere. So it didn't really present too much of a problem. I've shot in tighter spaces and... yeah, that really didn't enter into my planning or consciousness that much.
Gotcha. But yeah, I'm excited to see, you know, how this thing turns out. You know, I got the luxury of being there for most of the time to watch it on set. But, you know, obviously seeing a shot, seeing the final things, completely different. So
that's where the magic all comes together. You know, you put in the visual effects and you get the color correction and the sound design, and all of a sudden it starts popping and you're like, whoa, this is it's a movie.
Do we have Jeremy, I know you said that like things are coming towards the finish line, but do we have any rough idea when, you know, even if it's like the fall or something like that, do we know when we might be able to, might be seeing this?
Yeah. I can't speak to that because I think that has a lot to do with the distribution company and their plans on how to roll it out. But I know that from a post-production standpoint, we're getting pretty close to being done as far as what I need to deliver. So the deliverables are coming soon, and then it's sort of in somebody else's hands to decide how that rolls out.
Hurry up and wait at that point.
Yeah, right? Pretty much. Yeah.
And so with the world basically being upside down right now, you know, what do you guys have going on? Like, you know, what's on the horizon with, you know, the current state of things?
It's been tough. I mean, everything has shut down. I mean, you know, the studio here that I have is in Baltimore, which there's a lot of film and video work that happens here. There's a lot of TV shows that come here. Baltimore plays for DC all the time. So all the shows you see that involve DC generally shoot here as well. And all of that just stopped. So the big stuff, the small stuff, everything just quit. I mean, it's starting to sound like things are starting to pick back up, which is great. I mean, we just entered phase two here in the city, and the film office tells me that film and video production is included in phase two. So I think, you know, assuming crews are small, and maybe it's 10 people or under, I'm not sure where it's at now. It might be more at this point, but I think things are going to start picking up. I know that there was a big network show that had gone away and it may be coming back. So that's good news for everybody. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, Jeremy pretty much covered it. There's a bunch of rumors and white papers floating around for how to do production once it starts again in the COVID world. But I think, you know, a lot of it's just going to be sort of wait and see, and who knows what's going to happen, you know, in the next 2 weeks or 2 months, or it's all sort of up in the air, but there are definitely rumors of stuff happening. So.
Very cool. Well, you know, guys, I can't thank you enough for taking some time out here. to just kind of talk shop about film. I personally can't wait to see Cyst and see what comes from that. And yeah, Jeremy, Nick, thank you guys so much for coming on and talking about the art of filmmaking.
Absolutely. Thank you, man.
Thanks for having us. It was a pleasure.
Yep, no problem. You guys have a good night now.
All right. Take care.
You too.
Thank you again to Jeremy Morrison and Nick Garner for their amazing interview. Be sure to check out their work in Cyst when it comes out. Follow that film on social media at Cyst Movie. I believe it's also on narrativefilms.com. Really great looking film. As I said, we've talked to George Hardy. We've talked to Darren Ewing about this film and you know, getting to hear these two crew members who've had such an integral part in the film. Just kind of tells us that this is going to be a really crazy ride when this film gets released. So check that out. Be sure to like us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Psycho Show. You can also find us on the Epicast Network at epicastnetwork.com. If you have a favorite movie or quest you want to throw our way, you can contact us at cinemapsychoshow.com. And be sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts and iTunes, and we will see you next time.